You're listening to The Record on KUOW with Marcy Silliman. I'm David Hyde. And our guest today says there's a paradox at the heart of the U.S. economy. On the one hand, the economy is growing. On the other hand, average citizens are getting poorer. The U.S. is still the world's richest large country, but the U.S. middle class is no longer the world's richest. So what's going on here and what can be done about it? David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter. His latest book is Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. Hi, David.
Hi, David. Glad to be here.
So thanks so much for stopping by the station. The New York Times is out with a big story this week about the U.S. middle class, saying no longer the world's richest. How big of a change is this from kind of where we were in the United States 35 years ago, say?
Oh, it's a tremendous change from 45 years ago. The average income of the bottom 90% of Americans, based on tax returns, has now fallen back to the level of 1966. And when I started writing about this stuff in the New York Times 20 years ago, the idea that inequality was getting worse produced all sorts of complaints to them that that's crazy. You know, what can this possibly be? That's ridiculous. But it's now very well understood, in part because of all the work I did in the New York Times for many years, that, in fact, this is the issue of our time, the inequality that we're seeing.
How do we compare then today to other wealthy nations?
Well, if you do what's called a Gini index, if everyone had the same income, you'd have one. If if one person had all the income, it would be one. If everybody had equal income, it would be zero. We're in the 50s, and our neighbors in that category are China, Brazil, Venezuela, Mexico, and Russia. The only other modern country that's near us is the United Kingdom, and we're still a great deal different than from the United Kingdom in terms of our inequality.
You know, we hear a lot about competition from other countries, competition with China, et cetera. Is the issue that we're not growing as fast as we once did? Is there anything kind of related to the economy with this?
I think, in all the books that I've done, including this new anthology, have documented this is government policy.
All right. So the country's getting wealthier, but the middle class is getting poorer.
And we literally have thousands of laws, many of which I have exposed, that take money from the many and redistribute to the few. And this is going to be a telling killer example of this, David. If you take the average increase in income from 1966 to 2011, that's 45 years, for the bottom 90%, that's $59. That's all it went up, $59. Count that as one inch. The 1% of the 1%, 5 miles to one inch. 5 miles. The income growth in this country is so concentrated that since 2009, when the Great Recession ended, 95 cents out of every dollar of added income has gone to the top 1%, and the bottom 90%'s income has been going down. And this has terrible consequences for public health, for longevity, for taxpayer burdens.
David K. Johnston's a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, and we're talking about growing economic inequality here in the United States. And I can imagine, you know, some economists listening to this and saying, you know, okay, maybe that's what's happening right now, but ultimately the invisible hand's going to take hold here. And if the economy's growing, wages are going to pick up. What's wrong with that perspective?
Well, because Congress has thwarted the invisible hand. One of the major developments in this country that's gotten very little attention is all of the rules government has put in place that thwart competitive markets, promote oligopolies, duopolies, and monopolies, and artificially raise prices. And this, the effect of this is to concentrate money in the hands of the few, and then we have all of these devices that I have exposed over the years that take from the many and funnel to the few.
You know, when I was thinking about this morning, I was thinking if you go back even further to the 19th century, the second top-selling book was this book by Henry George, Progress and Poverty, talking about the same kinds of paradoxes that you're talking about here. How do you get economic growth and at the same time an increase in poverty, or at least no improvement for the middle class?
You can have an increase in wealth and want at the same time, and that's what we're seeing today, an increase of both wealth and want.
Yeah, so it's nothing new, and yet from your perspective, it seems to be accelerating today?
Yes, and it will continue to. What will happen as we go forward is that every time the economy booms, more and more gains will go to the top. And when the economy contracts, those people who have the financial wherewithal to withstand it will temporarily see a big decline, but they will come back even stronger. And that's what we've been seeing in the data now going back to the late 70s.
David Cave Johnston's a reporter. His new book is about growing economic inequality here in the United States. We're talking also about the big news this week that the U.S. middle class is no longer the world's richest. And I want to talk about the minimum wage for a minute, because that's the buzz here in Seattle. Seattle is thinking about an increase up to $15 an hour. We're expecting some sort of proposal later today. It could be higher, somebody told me earlier. And I'm wondering how big, I want to get to some solutions in a minute, but let's just focus on the minimum wage for a second. How big is the minimum wage in solving some of the problems that you're seeing?
Oh, the minimum wage we have today is a major burden on taxpayers. It's major holdback to the economy. I was a minimum wage worker in 1966. I was married, had a child, was in high school, and had four minimum wage jobs. Today's minimum wage is only two-thirds of what it was back then when you adjust for inflation. I don't know how we would have eaten or kept a roof over our heads if we only got two-thirds of the pay we get. So we need to, at a minimum, restore the minimum wage to where it was in the 60s when we were not nearly as well off a country as we are today. And then we need to ask ourselves, how is it that all of our economic competitors have unions? In the case of Germany, executives have unions and bargaining power and are doing better than we are. The policies that we're pursuing, in which you're literally hearing politicians call for lower incomes for people, if you listen carefully to what they say, a number of them are calling for lower incomes for people. Those are not going to build a strong, durable America that will protect our liberties and create future wealth.
All right. How do you build a stronger, more durable America beyond the minimum wage? And you also mentioned unionization. What else?
Fundamentally, we have to have competitive markets with integrity. And in order to do that, we have to have a system where let me just take public health, which is part of what I'm here in town speaking about. For every dollar the other 33 modern countries of the world spend and get universal coverage, we spend $2.64. It makes us uncompetitive, and we have millions of people, even with the Affordable Care Act, who don't have care. If Portugal, with half our income, can afford universal health care, why can't we? Every day in America, 47 babies die who would live if we had the healthcare systems of Norway, Sweden, and Japan. 15 die if we just had the level of healthcare for infants that Cuba has. My goodness, we're behind Cuba? More babies die here as a per million than in Cuba. That's outrageous. And it tells us that our systems aren't working. What we're doing is creating, through Congress and our state legislatures, an economic system that takes from the many to benefit the few.
I want to ask about the talk. You're giving talks tonight, right?
I'm talking in 210 Kane Hall tonight here at the university, and it's free. And that's sponsored by three health groups. And then Saturday at 8 p.m. at Town Hall, Physicians for Social Responsibility. I think there's a $5 charge for that one.
All right. David K. Johnston. But I want to just, you know, the counter to this, of course, the Republican perspective, and we mentioned the invisible hand earlier, is just free market works. Businesses create jobs. And the more jobs we get, the higher the pay, the less economic inequality.
Well,
what's wrong with this?
If all of this worked, we'd be swimming in jobs. If tax cuts and removing regulations and replacing them with regulations written by business worked, we would be swimming with jobs. We've been going down this road now for 33 years. It simply hasn't worked. And by the way, I teach in the business school and the law school at Syracuse University. I teach regulation. There's no free market. That's a technical term used by economists. Markets have rules. Everything has rules. Baseball regulates how many stitches are on the baseball. And the rules we have for some markets, the electricity markets, for example, actually raise prices. They don't lower prices. They raise them. And throughout our economy, we have replaced sound rules with unsound rules, whether it's not underwriting mortgages, which led to the meltdown of the economy, selling fraudulent securities and not prosecuting anybody for doing that. We have created what are essentially anti-economic rules that handcuff the invisible hand that Adam Smith so brilliantly wrote about in 1776.
All right, just to wrap this up, I want you to what's your message from this book and from your work for folks who aren't affected by this personally? They're not among the 25% of people in Seattle who are earning below the minimum wage or below $15 an hour, I should say, but folks who are doing quite well. They're concerned about this, but they're not affected. What's your message as to why they should be
concerned? I'm in the 1%, and I care about this because it affects the society I live in, the tax burdens I have, the opportunities for my children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren when they come around. we are either a society and we will rise or fall as a society, or we follow this extreme notion that only the individual matters. And in that case, we will hasten the day that high school students will sit down and pick up a history book with a chapter that begins with the words, "The United States of America was."
David K. Johnston, thank you so much.
Thank you.
His book is Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. You're listening to The Record on KUOW with Marcy Silman. I'm David Hyde.